2020 was supposed to be a year that saw the fortunes of the hog industry push higher. But, of course, COVID-19 ambushed the market and threatens to cause damage that will take months to dig out from under. And all of this is happening with the strongest export market like ever. I mean, it's just weird.
Live from the subterranean news lair via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Dr. Dermot Hayes, an economist from Iowa State University. And right after the news, Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com is likely to bubble over. You see what I did there, Chip? Bubble over.
I heard it.
I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre!
All right, Davis.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you, brother.
Story? Yeah.
Appreciate it.
How's everything?
Good. We've got some warm temperatures here in Northeast Iowa.
All right. Yeah. That's what I hear from the outside. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot that we were slowly, you know, working you back into society.
We are? I'm not ready for that phase yet.
Maybe that was Davis number two or number three, and I sure hope it wasn't number four, because we need to keep number four like in the trunk.
Yeah, yeah. They're actually digging. I gave them shovels and put them to work on the lower mezzanine.
Well, good. Yeah. Good. Oh, Davis, I tell you, this morning we focused on the produce market.
Yes, we did.
We had Tom Karst, editor of The Packer, on, and then we had a farmer forum with a produce farmer out of the Central Valley in California, and then a direct-to-consumer producer in East Central Iowa, and I thought it was fantastic. Yep. Really good information on how growers and the industry are being affected by the COVID-19 event that we are all find ourselves stuck in the middle of right now.
And, you know,
We're going to talk pork this afternoon.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And Dermot's going to be awesome at it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You can wrap bacon around just about anything and it will improve.
Especially at the food service and the restaurant level, because when we lost that bacon as a condiment in the environment that we're in, that hurt and hurt in a big, big way. So we'll get into that with Dermot coming up here in just a little bit. We got Bubba standing by. Let's get to the news.
Well, Chip, overnight rains in the southern plains of the U.S. were a bit heavier than expected, putting pressure on winter wheat futures. There continues to be talk that Russia and Ukraine will put a temporary halt to wheat exports early next month, but traders warn restricted wheat exports from the biggest wheat exporting region is only price friendly if it turns into new demand for U.S. supplies.
That's right.
That makes sense, right?
Yes, it
does. July hard red winter wheat was 6.25 cents lower, 497.75. July soft red flipped 2.5 cents to 543.75. That's flipped. July spring wheat softened 1.25 cents to 516.5. Boy, we're off to a great start, Chip.
We are. You know, the other thing that we had trouble with today is that list of state-owned reserves that China is talking about rebuilding. Wheat wasn't on the list.
Ethanol production in the weekend at April 17 fell another 7,000 barrels per day to an average of just 563,000 barrels per day. Ethanol stocks in the week increased 220,000 barrels to set a new record at nearly 27.7 million barrels. While certainly not price friendly, the latest ethanol inventory report suggests production may be very close to a low. That allowed rumors that China will be looking to refill state-owned reserves of corn to pull corn futures higher. May corn futures were 8.25 cents higher, 317.5. July corn jumped 7.5 cents to 324.75. December corn closed at 336.75, up 4.75 cents today.
Yeah, the bottom line on the ethanol story is it may not be as bad as it's going to get, but we're a whole lot closer, at the end of the weekend at April 17 than we were the previous week.
Yeah. Bean prices were hesitant to follow corn to the upside in early trade, with meal prices holding the bean market back, but nearby bean futures were higher by the close. USDA this morning reported the sale of 198,000 metric tons for delivery to China in the current marketing year. That confirmed yesterday's rumors. The sale also put a focus on comments from a Chinese official earlier this week that the country expects to import about 92.5 million metric tons in 2020, up nearly 4 million metric tons from last year. May soybean futures 4 cents higher, 834.5. July gained 1.75 cents to 842.5. November bean futures closed at 846.5. That's down a penny and a half, Chip.
Yeah, I'll admit I'm a little disappointed with the way that the market performed today. Soybean meal, I think, is the reason. Kind of just acted as an anchor on the bean pit.
On the livestock side, record boxed beef prices are stalling selling interest in live cattle futures. Heavyweight choice graded boxes were up, Chip, more than $11 this morning. Yeah. But movement was light. Limiting strength is exceptionally cautious demand for cattle as packers deal with labor absenteeism caused by COVID-19. June live cattle, 15 cents lower, 83.92.5. August cattle slipped 15 cents, 88.35. May feeders, 7.5 cents lower, 116.67.5. And on the snout side, hog slaughter through Tuesday was off more than 40% from year-ago levels, and market-ready hogs are being siphoned into an exceptionally disrupted hog processing sector. Tightening pork supplies is supporting pork prices, helping to limit pressure on lean hogs. May lean hogs, $2.95 higher, 47.22.5, and July fell $1.72.5, 51.20. Chip.
Yeah, that heavyweight choice box beef, Davis, 270. 270, 100.
$2.70.
I couldn't hardly believe it when I saw the update this morning. Crazy. All right, thanks, buddy. Let's bring in Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
What's up, Chip? How you doing, guys?
Good, good, good. So here we are, another week deeper into the COVID event. What's your take now? How has it changed in the last week?
Well, it appears that there's some potential enthusiasm, and at least in corn right now after getting pummeled every day. But, I think that, you know, as we slowly open the economy back up, we'll start to see a little bit more demand. Hopefully we can get the slaughterhouses fully operational, because obviously there's a dramatic spread between cash and futures, because they don't have any supply basically, and they're actually holding up everybody. So, you know, again, I think that, you know, there's some things will change. But again, we're not going to go from zero to 100 in one day either. Right. This is going to take some time. But there are some encouraging signs based on some of the price action we're seeing that does show things in our markets might be turning to the positive. And that's the only I can give you. That's the only I can get excited right now.
No, I get it. I get it. I appreciate that. What happened in oil this week? Did you ever think that we'd see something like that?
I actually wrote that we'd see negative. Well, you might have got that text. I called that on Monday. You could see that. That was an easy call once you saw it coming and you knew. Yeah. Yeah, that was the opposite of a silo squeeze, right? We've all seen that where the expiring day goes crazy up because you have too many guys are short. Well, here too many guys were long and they couldn't get out. And the only way they could get out is to keep selling. And, of course, you will hear in the news shortly a couple of firms that probably went busted. And that was, you know, obviously the tap on the shoulder and the forced liquidation. And we all know what that brings. Never good. Yep.
Never good. Never good. Bubba, take care of yourself, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Be good. I'll see you later next week.
All right. That is Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. All right. We're going to talk everything hog market coming up next. We've got Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, Farms On, for our family and yours.
Man, that's an excited group today. Wow, Davis, what a crowd.
They're hot to trot, baby.
They are.
I've had to pass out bacon to them, and it got them all excited.
You start passing out bacon on a stick, bacon by the slice, bacon by the slab. It gets people excited, dude.
We tried wrapping bacon around a pencil. We've had mixed results, but anybody want to try one? Bacon wrapped a pencil? Yeah! Whoa! They do.
They do. They're all in. They're all in. Love it. Love it. Love it. Hey, Farm On. Don't forget, everyone, if you would like to participate in the effort, you're going to be seeing a whole lot more of it come next week. Go ahead and send a message with Farm On, capital F, arm, capital O, capital N, Farm On, one word, to 31313. Send a picture of what it means to Farm On to you this spring. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into this. We've got Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University. He's an ag economist down there, joins us right now. Dermot, it is good to talk with you. How are you?
Great. Nice to talk to you guys, too.
Yeah, good. Okay, Dermot. NPPC, National Pork Producers Council, tapped you on the shoulder and said, let's figure out how much damage has been done. How did you go about assessing just how much damage has been done?
Well, I worked with Steve Myers on that, and what we did was take the change in the futures prices from March 10th to April 10th for all hogs that will be processed for the rest of the year, and multiplied that negative number by the number of hogs we expect to harvest in each month, and I came up with a number that was a damage estimate that was almost $5 billion.
Right. Now, has it changed since you put those numbers together, Dermot? Has it gotten any worse? Has it gotten any better?
It got a little bit worse after we did that, and now the market's starting to come back a little bit, especially for the deferred contracts.
Right. Okay. So, Dermot, I realize that this may be an unfair question because it is exceptionally difficult to track exactly what is going on with the shackle space in the industry right now. But where do you think we are right now? What kind of capacity are we running at?
Well, just the plants that are down are 7 to 10%, and then we have slowdown at other plants due to absenteeism and just the need to space workers out. So we've probably lost 15 to 20% of our capacity, and we needed almost all of that.
Yeah, you can't. The industry can't spread that 15 to 20% of hogs out through. So today they're not going to Tyson and Waterloo. Instead, they're going to CJ, Columbus Junction, or up to Spirit Lake, or wherever they're going, Marshalltown. But you can't spread even Waterloo's hogs out around the other plants, can you?
Well, it's a disaster for some producers who relied exclusively on the closed plants, but hopefully they can store some of the market-ready hogs by putting them on a diet and then double bunk some of the feeder pigs that are coming in. Bottom line, we can do this for 2-3 weeks, but in the end, we need to get capacity up and running or we're going to have more hogs than the world needs.
Okay, now that 2-3 weeks number, Dermot, I think that's really interesting because if we could get this thing back up and running at close to full capacity, and I like your number, middle of May, if we can do that by the middle of May, I kind of feel like by the time we get to the end of summer, everything could be functioning about like it should, right?
Agreed. We just need to work on the safety in those plants and get the equipment into the plants and get the testing done and figure out who's sick and get them home and figure out who has antibodies and get them to work.
Boy, that's interesting. What do you make of the plan, I guess, the PPEs, the testing that is happening at some of the plants? Have you given that much thought? Is it adequate? Does it need to be more?
Well, in Iowa, the governor will immediately dispatch 1,000 tests to any plant that requests it, and that's been going on. Now, the good news is that the testing is starting up. The bad news is we're getting a lot of positives, and so that's kind of scaring people. But in the end, she's doing the right thing, and I can see light at the end of the tunnel because of that response.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. When we're trying to figure out the overall capacity of this industry right now, Dermot? And I like your 15 to 20% is where we're struggling. But do we just watch slaughter numbers? Is that what we have to watch most closely?
Yeah, I think so. That slaughter numbers relative to where we expected numbers to be, that would be the best estimate.
Okay. All right. Very good. So you're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, which maybe takes away. Well, no, because I think it does fit with my next question, because I have had some people on the show that have suggested that maybe the markets have already factored in kind of a worst case scenario. Is that possible?
The reason that the market crashed around March 10th is that people figured out that this was going to be a problem with capacity at the plants. So the market anticipated the problem and predicted right. Now, it didn't predict six or seven plants down. It probably predicted about as many plants as we have. So if we lose more plants, we're going to see bigger drops in negotiated hog prices.
Man, oh, man. And that's hard to argue that right there, that we're going to continue to – we've got to ride this wave of plant closures and plant slowdowns and try to figure out where the market might be going next. That's the bottom line, right?
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I want to talk about the recovery in this industry, Dermot. What has to happen to get us on that path to recovery? You've already mentioned the labor situation.
So the part of the U.S. economy that takes meat from packers and gets it into retailers, that's all gummed up too. They have absenteeism, they have inefficiencies, and so we need to get the whole economy humming, and including the distribution and retail sectors, and that's going to take a while. We need to get exports back up and running. Mexico is really down in the dumps, and so we need to find a place to send the hams that would have gone there. So it takes time. It just takes a while to get things back up and running, and until we have massive amounts of testing, we're not going to get there. So maybe we start back up in May, but it's going to take months to get back to full operation.
Yeah, Dermot, were we rendering bellies for a while just because of the bacon demand evaporated when the restaurants closed?
So we send about 25% of all product into food service, and that almost disappeared overnight. The packages that we had were bigger than most retail customers wanted, and they were marked not for retail sale. So there was product backup. My understanding is that the packers either put it in storage or they give it to food centers. I don't think a whole lot got rendered. There
Good.
Was enormous donations to food banks from the packers when this happened.
Yeah. Okay. So let's stay on that path here for just a second, since we're talking about what recovery looks like in the USDA COVID aid package. What is CFAP? The $300 million per month in food purchases, including $100 million for meats. Does that help? Does that money get back to the farm?
I had done some calculations, and just to replace half of the food service demand would have required a pork purchase of about $300 million a month. And so a purchase plan of $100 million that includes chicken and beef and turkey is not going to cut it. We're going to be sitting on a lot of big packages of pork until we either get the economy back and get the food service back. And we can store that pork, so it's not a complete disaster, but storage space is limited. So we either do that, but the USDA program is not going to have us, it's not going to solve the problem, but it's a step in the right direction.
Well, and Dermot, the $125,000 per commodity pay cap on it, for most hog producers, That's pretty much a drop in the bucket, isn't it?
Yeah, you take the top 40 producers, and they're going to lose tens of millions, every one of them. And, just to get $125,000 to compensate for a $20 million loss, it's sinful. It's a joke.
Say that number again. The top 40 hog producers?
Yeah, 40? the top 40 sow owners, if you take all their hogs to market and then look at the reduction in, and the losses they're going to experience on those market hogs, they're going to lose more than $18 million. Every single one of them will lose more than $18 million because of this. And so to get they own 2/3 of the hogs. So for them to get $125,000 is just it's almost an insult. It's just not going to help.
Oh my gosh, Dermot. We're almost out of time in this segment, and I want to pick this up when we come back in the next segment, because we're talking about two-thirds of the sow ownership here, each one of them losing $18 million a year.
Or more.
Or more. What I want to find out from Dermot when we come back is, what are the chances that we see some of these producers go out of business? What are the chances that we see some real significant reduction in the number of sows that we've got in the country that are feeding pigs into the system? Wow, big numbers. We're talking with Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University. We're going to continue the conversation and take a look at how this might change the industry going forward. That's next on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Senate clears Supplemental Small Business Administration aid. The House is expected to clear the package on Thursday. But get this, about one-fourth of Americans think it's at least fairly likely that they will lose their job in the next year. Talk about disheartening. That's bad news for meat demand, too. The Chinese ambassador to the U.S. urges serious rethinking of ties. He said, "I think I should be hoping for more than just a pause in tensions, but really a serious rethinking of the very foundations of this important relationship." Senator Hovind says price loss calculation for CFAP is still being developed, and there's a record-setting sign-up for 2019 safety net programs. Check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. We're talking what's happening in this hog industry with Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State. Davis, before we return to the conversation with Dermot, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, I've got July hard red winter wheat 6.25 cents lower today, 497.75. July soft red slipped 2.5 cents to 543.75. May corn futures were 8.25 cents higher, 317.5. December corn closed at 336.75. That's up 4.75 on the day. May soybean futures 4 cents higher, 834.5. November 2020 bean futures closed at 846.5, down 1.5 cents today. On the livestock side, June live cattle 15 cents lower, 83.92.5. May feeders 7.5 cents lower, 116.67.5. And May lean hogs were $2.95 higher, 47.22.5. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. We're talking with Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University, and Dermot's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on out there in this hog industry. Dermot, there's a couple of things going on. I was talking with Todd Horwitz from BubbaTrading.com about, you know, what happened in crude oil futures with the May contract going negative earlier this week, and that we were actually seeing in that industry, in the futures industry, the holders of the physical commodity paying somebody to take delivery of that physical commodity. We've seen that in the cash feeder pig market, haven't we already?
We're there. Those feeder pigs are worth nothing, and there are anecdotes about one producer who wanted to offload some feeder pigs and paid somebody to take them.
And we were there before. It's been a long time since we've been there, but we've been there before, haven't we?
1998, in the fall of 98, we had the same issues that we have now.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Back then, yeah, I remember a Wall Street Journal article of a farmer in southern Iowa just letting their pigs out of the pens and into the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and yeah, opening up the gate. Go ahead.
Well, let me jump in there then. Doctor, what is that? Are we worried about feral hogs if that goes on? Is that a thing?
No, they don't survive the Iowa winter too well.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they don't survive the Iowa winter too well unless we do a good job of taking care of them in our climate-controlled finishing houses, right?
Exactly.
That's exactly right. So, Dermot, I'm gonna ask this question. If you want to comment on it, that's great. If you don't, that's fine. We're hearing some reports that some pigs are being euthanized. Have you heard much on that?
I heard anecdotes, but it's a private and personal decision that each producer has to make, and they're not going to advertise it or make data available. So you see anecdotes, and you see that the deferred contracts are coming back in price, and that suggests that fewer pigs will be brought to market in the fall.
Okay. All right. Yep. Very good. Very good. So these farrowing operations that are out there right now, the 40 biggest that you were talking about at the end of the last segment, are they all going to make it through this?
Individual decisions about hedging and finances and individual ability to withhold this kind of damage. I don't know enough about each of them, but I know that I'm concerned about some of them. And those individuals, those companies are the ones that own, that rent the finishing barns. And so the pain spreads even to medium-sized corn growers who have built a finishing barn to get the manure and get the rent.
Okay. Okay, you know, as we go through all this and we talk about the vertical integration that has happened in the hog industry, is what's happening, could it eventually threaten packers, or are the packers fairly, I don't want to say immune to it, but could it eventually impact them negatively?
They've taken a bath on the carcass cutout, and so they're suffering along with everybody else. But the decline in live hog prices is at the farm level prices is greater than the packers have experienced. And the packers can access international markets for some of the product that food service used to buy. It just takes a kind of a reorientation of how they pack.
Right. Okay.
I think everybody knows, there's a huge market in China that we're leaving untapped. And so somehow we got to get back into it. And we got to fully take advantage of that.
Yeah, I was going to get back to that, because we've been trying to talk about what the recovery looks like. Explain what is happening with the tariffs on China and how it could help.
This is unbelievable, but we still have metal duties on Chinese products, even though we have a phase one deal. And guess what? They still have duties on our pork. So hog prices in Europe are far higher than here, because European farmers are shipping millions of tons into China, and we have to discount our product to get it in by the full 25% duty that we have to pay that the Europeans do not. It just boggles the mind that we talk about China and we still have duties against each other, and we have this phase one trade agreement that's supposed to be made based on market decisions, and we still have duties. It just blows me away. And what's really frustrating is that the Chinese, the stuff we sent to China has the bones in it. They have cheap labor to take bones out. So you can run a packing plant far more efficiently if the pork is destined for China. And that's exactly what we need right now. And unbelievably, we're still in a fight about metals.
So what you're saying is, if we would get rid of those tariffs, that we could start sending carcasses instead of trim.
Yeah, they need as much pork. Their gap is equal to our total production. They could buy it all if we would make it available.
What has a bigger impact, Dermot? The $125,000 that might go out to individual producers, or getting rid of the 25% tariff on U.S. pork going into China?
Well, the 125 limit is devastating to those larger producers. Getting into China would benefit every single producer and every single packer. It's win-win. We've got pork probably being euthanized on plants that is worth five times that price in China, and we don't have the labor. Well, we don't have labor in our plants, and that's causing cheap live hog prices. If we could just get those plants to run on a Chinese model and get rid of the boning hall and move some of those workers into the kill line, we could double our exports to China.
Oh, Dermot, you're talking about a significant number now on a weekly basis for exports.
Yeah. The opportunity in China is phenomenal, and it's just frustrating that we continue with those metal duties and they continue with that 25% duty on U.S. pork.
Okay. So, yeah, okay. Absolutely astonishing is right. Dermot, that's got to be priority number one when we pick up the phone call or pick up the phone and call a lawmaker or NPPC is to get rid of those tariffs.
NPPC is on it. The trouble is you've got a USTR that is run by former steel lobbyists, and they view the value of the steel companies more than the impact of U.S. pork production.
Okay. Okay. Well, we got to scream it. We got to scream it from them as loud as we can that these tariffs can do a heck of a lot of good. Removal of the tariffs can do a heck of a lot of good for the industry going forward.
Yeah. Scream it at the congressman, but don't scream it at NPPC. They're doing everything they can.
Gotcha. Gotcha, Dermot. Gotcha. Okay. Speaking of going forward, how is this event going to change the industry going forward? And I want to read you a question that we got in from a listener yesterday when we said that you were going to be on the show with us. How much of the packing industry can be mechanized or robotic? The industry isn't going to go through this again. They're going to eliminate as many employees as possible.
So I visited the St. Joe plant and was amazed at an automatic belly slicer. And I know that in the Prestige plant, they've brought in as much mechanization as they can. But both of those plants still need 1,000 workers per shift. There's some elements of this that you cannot get away with because it's a biological animal, not a piece of metal that can be shaped precisely. So the plants have every incentive for the last 2 years to minimize on labor. And we didn't get to where we needed to be. We're still amazingly short on labor.
Okay. Okay. Dermot, I'm glad that we've got enough time to do this. I want to go back to what you were talking about in the first segment when you were talking about your outlook for the second half of the year, that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Go through that thought process again about how we get out of this.
Well, we get testing for both antibodies and the virus in place so everybody knows their status, and the people who have it stay home, and the people who don't can get out and get back to work. You gradually reopen the restaurants and hotels and travel center, but avoiding big crowds. And then as more and more people are exposed to the virus we get that immunity as a whole herd. And then sometime perhaps late summer, we're getting back to close to normal running of the economy. That's an optimistic scenario, and it depends on testing, and you know that hasn't gone as well as it could have.
Yeah, absolutely. Dermot, thank you for all that you do. Thank you for making time to be on AgriTalk and for sharing your knowledge and your insight into what's happening out there. I mean, it's unprecedented times. I've gotten tired of saying that, but it's true. It's true, and we need some thinkers like you out there to give us some guidance out, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, guys. I learned a lot from you, too, so it's a two-way street. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. Thank you, Dermot. That is Dr. Dermot Hayes. He is an ag economist down there in Ames at Iowa State University with some really, really good thoughts on what it takes to get out from where we're at right now. Okay, we're going to be back to wrap things up next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Okay. My goodness, man. I was scrambling for more sheets of paper while we were taking notes from the conversation there with Dermot Hayes. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Davis, you around? Doesn't sound like it.
I think
how about
I might
Harris?
Be. I'm not sure. No, I feel all pixely and weird.
Hell, we've got John.
What about
Aaron
the Overlord?
I had to tune in just
let
to
me
laugh
tag,
for that.
Let me tag the Overlord in. Yeah, tag you're it, John.
Yeah, man. Oh man, you guys, Had you heard that number that Dermot put out there about the top 40 farrowing operations in the country?
No.
On average, losing $18 million. Some will lose more, some will lose less, but on average, $18 million.
And looking you don't want to turn your nose up at $125,000, but if it's supposed to be propping up the business so it can survive this, that obviously is not going to do it.
Absolutely not. No. This is it's like Dermot said, we don't know what they did to manage the risk that they are facing now. We don't know if they had time to manage the risk because it all hit so fast. The way that the restaurant and the food service demand just evaporated overnight. In some cases, the guys just didn't have time to react.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Really crazy. You know, there's a lot of comparisons going on to is now as bad as what we saw in 1998. And I'm glad that Dermot remembered that there were farrowing operations in the fall of 98 that were paying finishing houses to take pigs off their hands. And there are stories that it is happening again. I think it is. As a matter of fact, I've been able to track along with what's happening out there. In some cases, it went from $2 a head to $5 a head, and we're all the way up to $7-$8 a head in some cases now being paid from the farrowing operations to the finishing houses to take those pigs off their hands. Now, if they're willing to do that, John, what does that say about their willingness to euthanize pigs?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it becomes the cheaper option. And, I mean, even that may not be an option. Even the paying somebody to take off your hands may not be an option for long because there's nobody picking up it on the other end.
Yep, exactly. But if they're willing to pay somebody else to take those pigs now, euthanizing pigs is very low on the option list. They do not want to have to do that. But like Dermot said, it is a personal decision. And that is a decision that you can ask for confirmation at every level along the way. And it's going to be hard to find it. Because that would be a difficult, difficult decision to make. And hopefully we don't get there. The timeline on the processing and getting back to something that is more normal than what it is right now, John, the middle of May, if we can do that, then we can work through a bunch of the pigs that have been backed up, the hogs that have been backed up by the end of summer. It's going to take that long. That way, by the time we get to the fall, the end of summer, fall, things can start to function more normally. We can get off of Saturday kills. See, that's one of the things that we haven't seen a whole lot of talk about is that Saturday kill. We always see smaller numbers on Saturday. Well, if every plant that can run runs as full capacity as it possibly can for every Saturday, we can chew through some pigs. We can get through some hogs in a hurry.
Compounding that problem, though, is they don't know where they're going to ultimately unload that finished product. I mean, the restaurant industry is going to be so different when we come out of this.
Yep.
And so they're going to know. And the packaging and routing and labeling for that end user is so much different than the grocery user. And trying to figure out where you're going to route that come summertime is going to be very difficult for them.
Right. That is so right. Right now, we're trying to figure out where the pigs are going to be routed to because they might show up at one plant and be routed to another before the end of the day. But by the end of the summer, it's going to be that question on the routing. Got a good tweet that came in at the end of the last segment. It's from @AdamLash1. He says, yes, the opportunity is huge for exports to China. Acknowledges that. Okay. However, you are still dealing with a pirate trade practices on the Chinese end. It's not as simple as just dropping tariffs. Good point, Adam. It is. That's a solid point. And you can't just abandon all the work that has been done to get to this point. So maybe instead this could be an opportunity for the Trump administration to advance the talks and say, listen, we need this to do this. And if we can get that, then we can take these metal tariffs off. If we take the metal tariffs off, look at what that does to your accessibility to U.S. pork at a time when we both need that to happen. If we're gonna rescue this relationship that we've been building with China, we better be doing some stuff like that, eh?
Well, and keeping the talk about coronavirus and the heightened sensitivities there separate from the trade talk.
Yeah, yeah. Which is going to be difficult to do if Missouri does, sue the Chinese government for the way that it handled the COVID outbreak. Wow, what an afternoon. What a day. The produce conversation this morning, the pork conversation this afternoon. I'm telling you. Oh, wow. Okay. You know what? But we got to keep it going. I'm going to say this first for John Harrod, for Davis Michelson, and for producer Joe Stackler. Thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, staying mentally healthy throughout this event. It matters. We're going to talk with Ted Matthews about that. Tomorrow afternoon, dairy's up next. Alyssa Badger from High Ground on AgriTalk.